corn and soybean markets refused to go down yesterday after USDA delivered record large corn and soybean yields, and the follow-through buying this morning has been infectious. Toss in a blow-your-doors-off export sales report for new crop beans, and it's turning into a really good week for new crop corn and beans.
Live from the cornbread basket of America via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Todd Becker, CEO of Green Plains. Then it's on to Robert White, Vice President of Industry Relations for the Renewable Fuels Association. And then we've got Dan Thompson, Professor of Animal Science at Iowa State University. And right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drovers. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. We have got a market, a grain market that seems to be outperforming today. We got those record yield estimates for corn and soybeans. And all of a sudden, we're looking at December corn futures back up above 335. We've got November soybean futures knocking on the door at $9 again. It was literally get those reports out of the way just so that we can look clearly at the future and decide what the pricing ought to be going forward. There's the China wild card that we are still dealing with on bean demand. That was brought front and center in this morning's export sales report. The new crop bean sales. Total bean sales were 3.4 million metric tons.
Whoa.
Yeah, wow. Big number, right? New crop sales, 2.839 million metric tons. China, 1.7 million. Unknown. Mm-hmm. 875,000. I think you spell unknown, C-H-I-N-A.
All right.
China may have bought 2.5 million tons of new crop beans in the week ended. What was that week ending? August 6th. Wow. So there's the wild card showing up in the bean market this morning. And then we're getting some word about getting out into the fields in Iowa and trying to do some assessment of the damage, and it is not good. I think maybe that's having an influence on this corn market today too, Davis.
And you hate to hear that. Gosh.
Yeah.
Not now.
Yeah.
Not now. Come on.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Okay, man. We got a lot of ground to cover. Let's get right to it. What do you got going?
Well, and I'm not sure what to make of most of this. So I've just sort of reported on both sides of these sorts of things. Here we go. American drivers hit the road in July after months of stay-at-home orders and lockdowns imposed on businesses. The U.S. government collected more than $3.8 billion in fuel taxes in July. That's up less than $2.2 billion in June. Meanwhile, Boston Fed Bank President Eric Rosengren remarked the U.S.'s over-eagerness to reopen commercial activity without sufficiently containing the spread of COVID-19 has backfired. He noted the difficulties are likely to continue, causing him to worry that an increasing number of temporary layoffs may turn into permanent job losses despite significant fiscal and monetary policy intervention. And other Fed Bank presidents are echoing these sentiments as well, Chip. I don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure if I get it or not either. Do you have the jobless claims numbers from this morning?
I absolutely do. That's our next item. Jobless claims dipped below 1 million for the first time in more than 4 months. Between August 2nd and 8th, a seasonally adjusted total of 963,000 Americans filed new claims for jobless benefits. That's 228,000 claims fewer than the 1.2 million applications the week before. New applications for unemployment benefits are down significantly from a peak of near 7 million in March.
Yeah.
I don't get
it. The trend is going in the right direction. The job situation is not good yet. I'm not saying that. But the trend is going in the right direction. So I'm not exactly sure about this whole idea about the backfire that the Boston Fed Bank president is talking about.
Yep. Well, here's this one. Democrats on the Trump administration say they are still miles apart on the next round of coronavirus aid. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said he had reached out to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi yesterday to revive talks, but their conversation reportedly showed the impasse is alive and well. Following that conversation, Pelosi and Democrat leaders issued a statement accusing the administration of refusing to budge. White House economic advisor Larry Kudlow says he's not worried about the impasse, noting, quote, the economy is doing great right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, okay. Basically the conversation between Mnuchin and Pelosi was, we agreed to continue to stare at each other.
Right.
You know,
it's your fault. No, it's stupid. Your fault. No, it's your fault. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then you got cheerleader Larry out there saying, but don't worry about it because the economy's just fine. Whatever.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Well, here we go on this one. EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler commented again about the status of so-called gap year waiver requests from refineries asking for relief from their renewable fuel standard obligations from previous years. Because the petitions go back as much as 8 years, Wheeler said he is not sure how long it will take to review them. And Chip, this is something you brought up. He said, quote, one question that I personally have now is, how can you prove an economic harm in 2012 if you're still in existence today? Biofuel proponents are expected to press for progress at a Des Moines, Iowa appearance by Vice President Mike Pence later today. Chip.
That could also be in this corn market, because if we've got Wheeler saying that, that could be that. I think that's a pretty strong indication that these gap year waivers, he is not looking favorably on those gap year waivers at this point.
Absolutely. And world crop estimates continue to decline. Let me just run these down. Strategy Grains again lowered its estimate for EU and Britain soft wheat crops. German Association of Farmer Cooperatives lowered its 2020 wheat crop forecast 6.8% from last season. Dry conditions in northern and western wheat producing areas of Argentina prompted the Rosario Grains Exchange to trim its planted acreage estimate for 2021. And the analyst APK Inform lowered its estimate of Ukraine's 2020 soybean harvest, citing smaller plantings than initially expected. Chip.
All right. All right. Thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. How you doing, Greg?
Good morning, Chip. I'm good. I guess the cattle market is going to join the soybean and corn market and move higher this week.
Yeah, that it feels really good, and it feels like it feels good coming from the cash market, too.
Absolutely. So we've got a cash market, Chip, that's $10 higher than it was the last week of June, and that's up $3 to $5 this week. Tops yesterday were 105. Interesting things going on. Cattle are trading pretty much every day of the week, whereas before the pandemic, you know, it was a rush to trade on Friday. And if you didn't get them traded Friday, you were at least a week away from doing it again. And what we saw and what we're seeing is that the number of cattle traded on a cash basis is increasing, and that they are doing a good job in working through that backlog. So 93,000 head per day average in July is what steer and heifer slaughter was. That compares with about 96,000 on average in 2019. So we're off 3,000 head a day, but we're also entering a time of fewer numbers of cattle. So there's strength in the market, and there's good hope for a fall price, you know, for feeder cattle and calves and fed cattle being similar to what it was last year, and that would be a victory.
That would certainly be a victory. And I really love hearing the negotiations happening each day of the week. That is important, and it certainly suggests that we're bringing some transparency, or at least increasing the transparency that is in that market. Thank you, Greg. We'll talk to you later, buddy.
Thank you, Chip.
You bet. That's Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. We've got Todd Becker from Green Plains up next on AgriTalk. No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Pioneer. For the best agronomic advice for your farm, count on your local Pioneer team for year-round advice. Pioneer, an American seed brand since 1926.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. Davis, one of the things that we've been talking about since the middle of March is the immediate demand destruction that we have experienced in so many of the ag markets. We've got the the beef market, the pork market, with the loss of the restaurant and the food service side of things. And we've also talked about the damage that has been done to the ethanol industry and the demand destruction that has taken place there. It's been it has been an interesting study to watch how the leaders in the industry have responded to this, and whether they are just waiting, or if they are getting aggressive and taking some making some changes in the way that they are doing business. And one of the first to step out and make some real changes in how they're doing business is Todd Becker. He is the president and the CEO of Green Plains Renewable Energy, and he joins us right now. Mr. Becker, thank you so much for making time for AgriTalk this morning. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We are doing just fine, just fine. Trying times, aren't they?
You know, they are. That's what brings the best out of people, though.
Yep.
So while certainly, you know, we've had challenges in this industry over the last several years, this pandemic has really, really shown who rises to the top and who reacts to certain things, and what and our employees and what they can do for people as well. And you know, I actually think it's made us a better company, but it's certainly been challenging with all the things going on around us.
Yeah, certainly. So we're talking about a transformation in Green Plains, and I think you're calling it a transformation to Green Plains 2.0, right?
Yeah, we're in the midst of a total transformation plan, is what we're calling it, to exactly what you're saying, go to Green Plains 2.0. And we even dropped the renewable energy moniker quite a while ago. We're at Green Plains Incorporated, and a lot of people just remember us from the first name of the company. But, yeah, we're transforming the company. We want to really be less dependent on government policy and be more dependent on things that we can control. And we have found ways to move up the value chain with new innovative products, technologies, and businesses that have allowed us to start to become less dependent, but also really look at the future and what we really want to be as a company.
Okay. Now, being less dependent on government policy, I assume, is referring to the frustration over the RFS, correct?
Well, of course. I mean, for the last 12 years or 13 years that we've been doing this, it's a constant battle with whatever EPA is in place or whatever administration is in place to get them to understand the importance of what we do. I mean, we are the most successful low-carbon fuel industry in the world, and we get no credit for that. And we don't get credit for that because our nemesis is big oil, and they don't want us to be successful, and they have so much money to fight against us, and it really does influence thinking in Washington within the legislature. And also, you know, kind of, so when we look at it, it's like we just don't understand how we continue to have to fight for our battle in the fuel tank when we're only 10 or 11% and they're at 90%, and that's something they're not going to give up. Yet again, you know, there is no other successful low carbon fuel in the world like ethanol, but we just have such a negative bias against us. It's almost an insurmountable battle at times.
It's unbelievable. It is unbelievable. You can only take the haters so long is kind of what it is what I'm hearing. And in this case, when the haters, big oil, have as much money and influence as they do, I understand exactly what you're saying. It feels like it is a battle that can't be won. Now, Green Plains is not stepping completely away from the ethanol market, though, are you?
No, listen, in order to be successful in what we call Green Plains 2.0 in our transformation, you have to be very good at Green Plains 1.0. So you always have to still make ethanol.
Excellent.
And that's the one thing that we embarked on really first cleaning up our balance sheet, which was reducing our debt levels, selling off businesses that we weren't really getting credit for, and really setting ourselves up for the future. And the next thing we did is said, okay, now we have to make sure that what we do it really well. And that was our Project 24 initiative, which is to go back into the top quartile of the industry, if not even into back to the top 10% of the lowest cost operating platform of a total portfolio. And we're in the final stages of that now. And then we now focus on now where are we going in the future? Now that we can make ethanol really well and survive the cyclicality and the volatility of what we have, not only in policy, but also in markets, and what's been going on. And now we set ourselves up well because we're a low-cost operator to invest in new technologies and new businesses and really improve the quality of some of the products that we produce. And, you know, there's been a lot of investment over the years in a lot of technologies that don't work, especially around the cellulosic upgrades and those type of things. But what we're doing is we're thinking about it much differently. We really focused on the co-product portion of the corn kernel. Okay. And a little less on making ethanol, whether it's low carbon or lower CI scores or things like that. We really wanted to focus on other parts of what we do and upgrade the quality of those products, and that's really where we start the total transformation plan.
Okay. Back to the Project 24, when you talk about maximizing the efficiencies in the plant, and I know that you said that you are looking at some technology purchases, but that effort, that Project 24 to cut it's basically to cut costs. Is that an operational or does it mean new technology?
No, what it is that, you know, we bought a bunch of different technologies around our plant. So we owned ICM, we owned Delta T's, Volga Bushes. And so, but they all operate differently. Obviously best in class, and it always has been, is the ICM technology. And so what we did is we designed a fix for all of our non-ICM plants. And then we brought it to ICM and said, hey, let's partner on this because we think we've done something really interesting, but we also think you could probably do things that are interesting for us as well. So we partnered on an upgrade for all of our non-ICM plants so they look, feel, and run like an ICM plant. And that's really what we've been able to accomplish. We have plants that are small, that are large, that are old different technologies, and they run as efficient and as cheap as the best in class. And no matter whether it's a 50-million-gallon plant or 100-million-gallon plant or somewhere in between, mm-hmm. they now all operate like best-in-class 100-million-plus-gallon ICM plants. And it all was around engineering, changing certain parts of the energy use, those type of things. And it really wasn't around people. It was more around the technology that we had at certain parts of the plant that just didn't operate efficiently. And so we literally tore the thing back down and built it back up. And the great thing was it didn't cost very much. I mean, it was actually a very low capital spend, and its paybacks are very quick. But now we are just coming off the back end of this thing, and our plant and our portfolio is going to be one of the best in the industry, if not the world.
Well, it sounds like the efforts that you've done could be industry changing going forward, and other plants and companies will follow along. Was that project behind your flexibility in being able to meet some of the demand for the hand sanitizers as quickly as you did?
No, not really. I mean, this was more just about making sure that we're low cost for the future. And it's interesting because the industry now says, I want to Project 24 my plant. And our Project 24 was, we wanted to get our operating cost per gallon below 24 cents a gallon. And we should do much better than that. And that's the most exciting thing about it. But it's funny, the industry now talks about it like, I'd love to get Project 24 in my plant. Well, you know, that was just something we called it, right? But it is a technology upgrade. The great thing is Green Plains, we're not just going to upgrade our plants and then let everybody else do the same thing. We do have a bit of a time period that nobody else can do it after we do it, just to give us a bit of a head start. Because, you know, this industry is a fast-following industry, and you know, and that's a compliment to Green Plains. A lot of things that we have done, whether it's corn oil or Project 24 or those type of things, those have been implemented industry-wide. So while we move ahead very quickly, we see the industry very much move behind our initiative. But I think more importantly, though, is that, you know, this industry continues to have to be better at what we do because we're competing against very big forces, and that's part of what we're trying to accomplish.
I get it. Okay. President, we've only got about a minute and a half left here, actually a minute. Vice President Pence is going to be in Des Moines today. If you could send him a message, what would that message be?
Get your EPA in line. Have him deliver what the president has said he's going to do when he came to Council Bluffs. Let us pump E15 through an E10 hose. There's no big deal to do that. Don't let the EPA tell you that there's an underground tank issue, because there isn't. These tanks are fully rated for E15. You know, deliver on the messages. You have an EPA that has truly tried to kill this industry. And I'm very vocal. We're big supporters of the president and his policies and making sure we hold China accountable. But, you know, you can't have an EPA that just runs out on his own is advocating for oil. I mean, the EPA's responsibility is clean air and clean water, and all they do is advocate for the oil industry, and it just seems to be opposite of what they're supposed to be doing. And this president, while certainly supports the farmers and says he supports the industry, yeah, as soon as he leaves, the EPA takes over and tries to really destroy this industry. But I think more important to what we're doing, since we have a little bit of time, is we're transforming our products to next generation feeds, next generation aquaculture feeds. We're moving up the value chain. We're going to transform this company, and it's very exciting, and it's things that I don't think anybody ever thought this ethanol industry could do. And I think we're going to lead the way on that, on transforming the industry and this company.
Mr. Becker, we've got to go. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beads, wow, man, record corn yield, record bean yield. Markets refused to go down yesterday, and the follow-through today is pretty impressive.
Yeah, really impressive, Chip. I think a couple factors in play there. You talked about the record corn and soybean yields, and while they came in bigger than what was anticipated, it wasn't really a shock to the market. And as a result, we had the higher price action yesterday with the strong follow-through today, like you mentioned. The other factor is that, the funds are short, heavily short corn, and they're covering short positions there. The same thing's happening in the wheat market. Now, the soybeans are the outlier there because the funds are long and they're adding to their length. So, I guess there just wasn't anything in the report yesterday that was shockingly bearish to them, and they flipped the switch and turned into buyers.
Well, and then we get that export sales report this morning, and boy, the new crop sales were outstanding on soybeans.
Yeah, especially on soybeans there. Upwards of over 2.8 million tons, and just a monstrous number. Actually, the Chinese purchases were almost at the top end of the range of estimates for all purchases on new crop soybeans. So, China's been an active buyer, and it showed up in the weekly report. Next week's report is going to include all these daily sales that we had, and we had more daily sales again this morning, seventh day in a row.
Right. Wow. Okay. Hop over to livestock real quick, 10 seconds.
Yeah, getting us, still trading to the upside there. So the bullish momentum that are in the grains is also carrying through to livestock this morning. Cattle are especially impressive.
Very good. Thanks, buddy. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Pivot Bio Proven, predictable, productive, weatherproof. Get a reliable partner, get the new nitrogen, get Pivot Bio Proven.
Davis, it is that time of the year. Crop Tour starts next week.
Right around the corner, my friend. Yeah.
Yes, it is. If you have not signed up for those Crop Tour meetings, go to profarmer.com. There is a red bar across the top. Click on that, and you can find out how to get signed up for the nightly meetings. They're free. They're all free.
You're saying free?
Free.
As in, like, no cost, no charge?
As in zero cost, yes. Yes. You know, the other thing that happens at this time of the year, I don't know if you're familiar with this or not. The other thing that happens at this time of the year is Robert White from RFA makes his way out to Sturgis, South Dakota, like every year. How you doing, Robert? It's good to talk with you.
Good morning, gentlemen. How's it going?
It's going well. It's going well. This is the guy that's got one of the best Twitter handles in the business, @FuelingGood. So it's good to talk with you. But there you are out in Sturgis at the bike rally. I know that you're doing some free fill-ups, aren't you?
We are. We call them free fuel happy hours. So we donated a small fueling station out to the Buffalo Chip Campground, which is just located outside of Sturgis proper. And we have 93 octane, 10% ethanol here, 24/7, 365, but 3 days a year during the rally for 3 hours a day, we give it away.
Nice. Is there a long line for that, or is the bike community a little skeptical?
No, there's always a good line, but they're skeptics, and that's why we're here. This is our 12th year out here at the Buffalo Chip, and as a partner and sponsor around the rally, and I can honestly say that the, you know, the rhetoric has evolved. It's gotten better, but there's still plenty of people that listen to the motorcyclist associations or, you know, their local motorcycle clubs and have heard the misinformation. And that's what we're here to do. And that's why the line at the Free Fuel Happy Hours is good, because we can answer their questions as they sit and wait for the fuel nozzle.
Yeah, Robert, what kind of questions do come up? And equip the listeners out here with the answers that they can give to somebody that might look, you know, crossways at them when they're filling up with ethanol at the pump.
Well, one of my favorites was a gentleman walked up, brand new Harley Davidson, had his buddies in tow, and you could tell where this conversation was going to go.
Yeah.
And he said, I just want to know why Harley Davidson says I should not use ethanol on my motorcycle. And I says, they do not. Your dealer might have told you that. And he said, well, why would my dealer say that? And I said, well, did they have some little bottles of ethanol fix or ethanol cure formulations in little bottles at, you know, $10 or $15 a bottle? And he said, yes. I said, well, you can't sell those if you don't have a problem.
Right.
And ironically, he still had his owner's manual in his saddlebag, went and got it. We pulled it out. He read it and got in line and filled up.
Nice.
One is we have 16 states that don't require 10% ethanol to be labeled. So we have every year someone from California pulls up and says, well, I wonder, you sure this is okay? And, well, you've been using it since 05. So it's all levels of, you know, sometimes it's just the initial information. They don't know anything. But a lot of the times it's pushing back on what they have heard. One of the things we did 3 years ago, and we still have it out today, is we go through all of the owner's manuals from all the manufacturers, and we have them quoted up on a plaque.
Okay. Yeah.
So they don't have to take my word for it. They can look at what their individual motorcycle manufacturer says in their owner's manual, warranties, engineers for, and they all say 10% and or higher.
Nice. You know, I love the story of the guy that asked the question and then got in line after you gave him an explanation, gave him an answer. But there's lots of times where you can give them the evidence, Robert, and they still are skeptical. That's the consumer that we need to get convinced.
Well, in everyday marketing and promotions, the rule of thumb is 20% love you, 20% hate you. You're never going to change either one of those. It's the 60% in the middle. And right. What we're trying to do here is obviously educate them on what they can put in their motorcycles. But the beauty of it is, if they'll put it in maybe one of their top three prized possessions that they own, they will definitely put it in their trucks or their cars or SUVs at home. So it's not about the little volume that motorcycles use. It's about all the fuel that's out there that might be triggered from this education.
Yes, excellent, excellent. Todd Becker from Green Plains was just on, Robert, and he, you know, obviously he has been frustrated by the battle against the big oil. And the line that he gave us was, we've got the most successful low-carbon fuel in the world, and we get no credit. That's a powerful statement, and I think it's a message that the ethanol industry, the biofuels industry in general, is going to be sending loud and clear in the future, isn't it?
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, the carbon conversation definitely changed a little bit based on the 2016 election. But no doubt it's ramping up and will continue to ramp up. But not only are we low carbon, we're high octane. So we're offsetting some of the most dangerous ingredients in gasoline, not only to human health, but to our air and water. And then you throw in that we're cheaper than all the other options. I mean, we have a great story. It's never about not having the bold and great talking points or the facts to counter any of the misinformation. It's just the level of volume and resources that we have at our disposal compared to the petroleum industry. And, you know, we've made it a long way. I heard Todd say, you know, how far we've come. He's exactly right. From some very humble beginnings within the last two decades to where we are today. And the future is bright. I mean, I don't think it's going in completely in by far in the wrong direction. He mentioned EPA. I couldn't agree more. That's our battlefront right now.
Boy, Yeah, that was a strong message that Todd delivered on EPA. But I'm going to ask you the same question, Robert, that I asked him. We've got Pence in Des Moines today. Vice President Pence, excuse me, is in Des Moines today. He's going to see some billboards that are not very supportive of the ethanol industry. He's going to see plenty of support for ethanol. But if you could sit down with him and give him a message to take back to EPA Administrator Wheeler, what would it be?
Well, my comments would all be around small refiner exemptions. I mean, they have just gifted the petroleum industry billions of dollars through gallons that they've waived in many cases that were contrary to what the intent of the law definitely was. Now we have a legal ruling on it, and they're still not taking that into consideration. And this week's news, it sounds like they might punt on the decision on the 56 or 7 that are currently pending, which, again, they're supposed to decide those in 100 days. So that means they're probably trying to punt it till after the election.
Right.
So it just doesn't stop. It just doesn't stop.
Right. You know, and one of the concerns that we've got, Robert, is that there are some strong ethanol supporters that are up for reelection out there. And if this issue gets punted to after the election, it might be a little difficult for those ethanol supporters to explain why they can't get President Trump to make the move on this. This is going to be a tough issue come the first Tuesday in November.
I couldn't agree more. I firmly believe that.
Man.
Personally and professionally.
We've got to get them to move. We got to get them to get something done on this and just answer the RFS question and settle it. That has got to happen. I sure hope it does. How much longer are you going to be out in Sturgis?
Well, we got our promotion today, a few things this afternoon, and then we'll start packing up and head south, or at least I'll head south tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, the rally continues on. It's one of those events you've got to look forward to this every year, Robert.
Well, it's a lot of work and a lot of fun at the same time. I'm not gonna sugarcoat that. I mean, this year we did skeleton crew just to be cognizant of COVID, and we've changed everything we do out here to help social distance and just be responsible. But we've got two young farmers from Minnesota, a gentleman from Virginia, and another one from Kentucky. I mean, this is a destination, a bucket list for a lot of people, and it's been fun to watch over the years.
Yeah, yeah, there is no question. You said that there's been a change in the conversation that you have. Explain that a little bit more, Robert, because I would imagine that a few years ago or 12 years ago when you started doing this out there, was there a lot of eye rolling when they looked at your fueling station?
Well, we had very humble beginnings. We didn't even start bringing in fuel, I think, until year three or four.
Okay.
But no doubt, there was people that, I use this all the time. You know, they didn't necessarily have an opinion either way. They just knew that they've used it and it worked. And then you kind of had the various questions from the differing groups, and a lot of that was based on where they were from or, you know, what association they might belong to. But what's been fun for me, we see the same people every year, and now they are telling that story. So
nice.
The national news for Sturgis this year is, this is going to be a COVID super spreader. No one cares about all that.
Right.
And we have hand sanitizer, like airplane bottles set out that Sire donated there in Council Bluffs, and we can barely keep the boxes full.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, there's not hundreds of thousands of people standing right next to a trailer. People are taking it serious and we're doing our best to help them.
Good, good, good. Robert, thank you so much for your time. Have fun with the time that you've got left out there, okay?
Thanks, Chip. Have a great day.
You bet. That is Robert White, VP at Renewable Fuels.
Register now for your chance to win one of more than 1,000 prizes, including a full-size side-by-side utility vehicle. Go to FarmJournalFieldDays.com for full contest details.
Hey.
Oh. Talk is brought to you by Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST. Learn how to boost your soil's performance and maximize ROI with Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST at smartnutritionmst.com.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me, and I'm looking forward to this conversation right here. We have Dr. Dan Thompson. He is the chair of the Animal Science Department at Iowa State University. Around the industry, he is known very simply as Dr. Dan. How are you today?
Oh, I'm great. What an awesome opportunity. I'm tickled death to be with you all today.
Good deal. Good deal. Hey, I'm going to be with you on Saturday down at the Jeff and Deb Hansen Agriculture Learning Center.
You're going to come to our Governor's Charity Steer Show.
I am. I'm going to be exhibiting in that Governor's Charity Steer Show, Dr. Dan.
Well, I know who's judging the showmanship.
Do you?
Just to let you know, he can be bought.
Oh, well, good. What do I need to bring with me?
Well, you know, adult beverages never hurt.
That can be done. That can be done. I am so looking forward to it. I'm going to be showing for Reeve Wagner, who is from Hampton, and Marbles and I are going to go out there and do our best. All right?
Oh, you're going to do great. You're going to do great. And what a great event and a great cause to help the Ronald McDonald House. And it, you know, just shows the beef industry and Iowa coming together, and we're going to do it for the kids.
Right, right. Yeah, that's the big reason that we're doing it. The story behind so many of these exhibitors, Dr. Dan, they're just incredible kids, incredible youth. That are bringing their animals in here to be part of this and to raise money for Ronald McDonald House Charities. I'm just honored to be a part of it and to work with Reeve. But I do have a favor to ask of everybody out there. Go to the Facebook page for the Iowa Governor Charity Steer Show. Find that picture of Reeve Wagner. It's number 15 on the list. And let's get the votes going. Let's get the likes. Let's get the shares. Let's get that People's Choice Award going.
hey, and while you're on there, don't forget that you can make donations or maybe buy a steer. Everybody
there you
needs
go.
A steer, don't they?
That's right.
I mean, I don't
that
know
is exactly right.
Need one.
Yeah.
So I think number 15 for showmanship and People's Choice, and then let's buy a steer.
There you go. There you go. I'm bringing my checkbook with me. We'll be making that donation.
Turning the radio show dangerously close into a bully pulpit here, Chip. I just want to throw that out there.
Well, hey, listen. Well, if you got a radio show, you got to use it.
That's right. Why do you think we get up every morning, Davis? Come on, man.
Absolutely. You think we're in this for the good of others? This is about us.
love it. Oh, I'm looking forward to seeing you down there. That's going to be fun. I've not been in the Learning Center before, and so I'm really looking forward to this. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Jeff and Deb Hansen did a remarkable thing by building that for Iowa State.
Absolutely. I'm so looking forward to it. Okay, the Farm Journal Field Days, you're going to do a presentation there or for the Farm Journal Field Days. What will livestock technology look like in the face of COVID-19? My goodness, what a topic that's changing all the time.
Yeah, the one thing that we found, everybody wants to say this is essential or this is not essential. Well, one of the things we found is that agriculture is essential. And we can't replace people getting up and doing the chores. We can't replace truck drivers. We can't replace people working in the packing houses or the kid down at the grocery store stacking the shelves. Those people are so essential. And what we found is there's a lot of things we talked about in this country because we're affluent. And we found there's a lot of things in these discussions that kind of went away during COVID because they just weren't essential. And we have a safe, wholesome, nutritious food animal supply chain. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about how we've changed the discussions from non-essential discussions to, hey, we need to eat, to what's this mean in the future as far as disease technology, as far as managing animals. I think we found out pretty quick people do not want to eat organic or soy patties.
Right.
Not knocking soybeans, okay? But,
right.
You know, a mom that can set even a hot dog down knows that her kid's getting the protein, energy, vitamins, and minerals for great mental and physical growth. And you know, we aren't all rich and famous that can hire a chef or hire a dietitian or someone to go buy our groceries to make sure that we have a balanced diet. And so we're about feeding everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. And feed it, boy, affordably. That's the thing. The everybody affordably. That's so important. The technology side of things, Dr. Dan, is it going to get into the packing plants? I mean, if we look for one of the areas where the vulnerabilities were really exposed by COVID, that's where it's at.
Yeah, go to a poultry plant today. They're almost all robotic. And so we'll see robotics put into our beef packing plants. We'll see smaller plants, more regional plants. And we'll see more robotics. That's the thing that we're going to talk about and that we'll see coming. You know, animal ID and traceability in this world of foreign animal diseases, human diseases. I think this is going to really open up that conversation that if we want to export, we're going to have to get a traceability system in place. The big thing is who pays for it, right? And to me, it's not something that farming and ranchers should have to pay for. It should be all Americans. So, something new.
Yeah, absolutely. Smaller, regionalized plants, local plants, Dr. Dan. We're going to see more and more of that happening. So, we need the technology in place to support all of that. It's been a fun conversation with you. I sure appreciate you making time for us.
So proud of you and so thankful for all you do for agriculture.
Thank you, Dr. Dan. We're going to see you on Saturday. I am so looking forward to this. This is going to be so much fun. I'm really excited about it. That is Dr. Dan Thompson. He is the chair of the Animal Science Department down at Iowa State University. Proud Cyclone right there. All right, thanks for listening this morning. You got to come back this afternoon. We got Steve Georgie, president of Allendale. And tomorrow morning, get this, USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue right here on AgriTalk.